Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is Great Inferno, the host of the Great Inferno show. Apparently I was muted, so I couldn't really hear myself. But anyway, welcome back and welcome to my show. It is 8 p.m. here in Wisconsin Dells. And tonight's show is actually, we are going to be interviewing Sean Walsh, the author of the Financial Illusions and Realities of Money. You can go to illusionsandrealities.com to purchase his book. I believe I have him here. Go ahead, Sean.
Hi, Fernando. How are you tonight?
Pretty good. It's nice and warm outside. It's 50-something degrees.
Yeah, you're playing basketball in Wisconsin outside, and when it's 50-something degrees, that's a good day.
Yeah. In other states, they will be staying inside, you know. They're like,
inside, yep.
Right. It's a blessing to have a 50-degree weather. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. That's a blessing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, let me, jumpstart this real quick. I know that that you've been in the show a couple weeks ago with this Kevin Mastaw.
Mm-hmm.
Am I pronouncing that right? Okay. And, you know, you talked about that. Listen to that. It's pretty interesting. And I do apologize. I have not purchased your book. But I know that, it's by the way you guys talked about it, discussed it, and that's going to be in my priority list. Now, go ahead and introduce yourself, and I'll give you a couple minutes to do that, and go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, people ask me, what gives me the credibility to say the things I do or write the book that I wrote. Everybody has credibility with any facets of any part of their life,
mm-hmm.
but... More than anything, I am no different than anybody else out there. I am just a regular guy. I happened
mm-hmm.
to follow the same system that everybody else did, and I became what would be, you put in quotes, very successful, if you will. I
mm-hmm.
reached that American dream of the, six-figure income and, multiple six-figure income at that. And,
right.
I did that through sales, but as I was growing up as a kid, I followed the path of watching everybody else and we all get our financial education from those around us, no matter who we are. And the problem is most of us do not learn from anybody that knows anything about money or finances or investing.
You get that right.
Yeah, it's just a fact. And the sad thing is the people running this country today have not been paying attention to the right people either. So, but without sidetracking. So when I was a kid, the stuff that I used to think about, I don't think any normal kid would, but it's interesting the path that I ended up on, and just coming from the point of thinking about the stuff when I was younger of investing and how do people get ahead, and I had parents that struggled the whole time. My dad ended up owning his own business, but he did that back in the
mm-hmm.
last recession that was just like this one is when he had it, and I remember the days that he would run out to the mailbox at his company looking for a check to pay his people, and he ended up paying his people off his credit cards, and it mm-hmm. just financially destroyed my parents.
Yeah, purchasing food with credit cards should be illegal.
Yeah, not only that, but he was paying wages for his guys off his credit cards.
Wages off his credit cards.
Yeah, these guys worked for him, and they had families to feed, so, You know, it's his responsibility to make sure they got paid. So
exactly.
Yeah. So he did that, and but I had an uncle who I you know, my not only myself but everybody else in the family deemed as the rich one. You know, the quote unquote rich one. Now, as I got older,
rich uncle, you'd be like,
rich
yeah,
uncle, right? Yeah,
we all have those.
Yeah, and quite honestly, my uncle was never rich, but that's what we all thought. He was a very high income guy, if you will, but and he was a
right.
salesman. So I thought, well, heck, why, I guess that's how you do it. So I went and got into sales and went out and succeeded doing that. But in the meantime, I did go out
right.
and get my license to be able to sell annuities and the insurances and things like that, and help people with. On those ends, but it taught me a lot about that industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the same path as everybody else, you know, the 401k, the, you know, the mutual funds, the, you know, just save, you know, buy and hold, the dollar cost averaging. And but I was a student of all this stuff. And as I was calculating in my head and figuring it out, it just wasn't really making sense to me. And
right.
it just wasn't adding up properly. And through the process, I really discovered what it really takes to retire. All the, as an example, with and actually I wrote about it in the book. In the old days, when they used to figure out calculating for retirement, how do you do that, right? And they used to say you would take 80% of your income. And I'm like, okay, I actually did that when I was 25 years old. I took 80% of my income, calculated that out, and then forwarded that, you know, up to what I would need. And how do I get there? Well, the problem is when I was, 5 years later, I'm making over 2.5 times that.
Uh-huh.
Well, I got to recalculate again. You always got to recalculate. Well, in that
right.
process, they said, you know, they actually figured out their problem when they were saying that. So it was 80% of your pre-retirement income. Well, okay, that's great. Can you tell me what your pre-retirement income is going to be? There's
yeah.
no way to know, right? So the only
there's
people that know what their pre-retirement income is are the people that are pre-retiring.
Okay.
So is that's not a fact, right? I mean, it's
no.
So, you know, I came upon a way to actually figure out and calculate what you really need. And so I put that in the book. And all these conversations I have with people of retirement
mm-hmm.
and investing, because people have always come to me and asked me about that stuff, and it's not a simple answer. You know, every individual has different needs, wants, has different goals, has different lifestyles,
right?
You know, different budgets, everything, and different circumstances, and so you can't just have a, you know, one size fits all mentality. But you got to have a basic principle to or foundation, and that's what the book is about. Is it's like your kindergarten through eighth grade education is what I tell everybody. It's a very simple, very easy read. There's some I try to tie stories around the numbers. And, to make it so it's not like, oh, a book about money. Ugh, that's the last thing I want to do is read.
All right. So. Let's get some callers in here real quick. 3797, go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great.
Good.
How are you?
Good, yeah. Also, the problem with retirement is that about inflation, because that doesn't take into consideration inflation. And nowadays, the interest rate, like even on CDs, they don't yield enough, like, yearly for what inflation is yearly.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's what I base everything off of, is inflation. And the rule of 72 is a very common rule that's taught when you get into the financial industry. And the rule of 72 simply states the interest, the way it's promoted, by the way, is you divide the interest rate that you're earning into 72, and that'll take you how many years to double your money. The problem is there's you know, tell somebody that has investments out there today in their 401k or mutual funds what their interest rate is, and it's a negative, right?
Right.
But that rule of 72 is just simply it's a doubling rule. That's all it is. And so if you take inflation and you take the history of inflation and you tie that into 72, that will give you exactly what you need to figure out what to retire. So, so that question there that you just stated, or the comment that you made, exactly ties into my philosophies or formulas on how you figure out what your pre-retirement income is. And I do go through the process and explain that in the book. I use the number 20 because it's just simple. You know, we can overthink things. I just try to make everything very, very simple. And you tie everything at 20. So
okay.
Whatever your income is today, to live the same lifestyle that you have today based on typical inflation, you would have to double your income 20 years from now.
Okay.
Okay.
And
just real quick, just to finish up, and I'll let you, if you have another question, is the problem is, with even within my formula, with what's going to happen with inflation now with all the money that they've just released, God only knows what's going to happen with that.
Yep.
Exactly. Now, you have another question, caller, right away, because I get some other callers coming in.
Okay. I have a – okay, so did you say that you're, like, kind of like a financial analyst?
No, I am. One of the things I tell people, I'm not a financial planner. I'm not a financial analyst. I do understand that stuff better than the average person does. I did at one time have a license to be able to deal within certain industries within that.
Okay.
What I am is very honest with people. I understand that market. Right. and so I can explain to you things that they typically won't explain to you. But
okay.
One thing I won't do is I won't say buy this stock or buy this mutual fund or put your money here, put your money there. I won't do that for anybody. I get people call me all the time and say, what would you do in this situation? And the only thing I would do is tell you what I would personally do after a long conversation.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Okay. Well, let's get another caller in here, 4170. Go right ahead. Okay. But I guess 4170. Do you have a question for Sean Walls?
Oh, hey, this is Kevin.
Oh, Kevin.
I'm dialing in on a phone that I don't usually use, so the 4170 caught me off guard.
How are you doing today, Kevin?
Oh, great. Unfortunately, this is the only way I can listen to you is through the phone. We just finished moving, and so...
Okay.
Yeah, so I just called in to listen. I don't have a question for you yet.
Okay. Now, I have a question here, though. Sean Wallace, if you want to touch up on the college education, can we really count on them?
No, actually, that's funny that you asked that. You know, the reason that this book was written, I was actually going to write a different book, and I was going to call it The College Myth. And when I sat down and started typing, it turned into this book. So The College Myth, or you know, I say The Illusions and Realities now with college, you can't count on a college education for anything. The problem is college or university has been sold to our children, to ourselves, through our parents, through the system, as the answer. If you do not have a college degree, you will not succeed. Well, I fully disagree with that. You don't need a college degree to succeed. As a matter of fact, if you want to put yourself into a corporate position where you're going to become a number and let go, and you want to have a 401k and you want to get downsized, get a college degree. Now, I'm not saying that to badmouth college degrees or anybody from doing that. You know, as a matter of fact, I encourage my kids to go to college also. But I encourage my kids to go to college for different reasons than everybody else does. And the reason I would encourage my kids to go to college is to learn how to learn. Take out of it from what you want and what you can. Go as long as you feel you need to, but you don't need to finish college to get ahead in life. You'll find that study after study after study that your truly wealthy people out there do not have a college degree.
Well, that makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Now, and also, I mean, it's how do you? I know that you know, you talked about the rich uncle and you know, and rich relatives and stuff like that. What is your definition of a rich individual, Sean Wells?
Well, I will answer that, but I'm going to come back to what most people say when you ask what the definition of rich is. Whenever I have a conversation with people, I say, you know, well, what's your definition of rich, right? Because I ask that question too. It almost always, I'm going to tell you probably 4 out of 5 times, so 8 out of 10, comes back to an income, right? Somebody who makes $250,000 a year, or somebody who makes $500,000 a year, or somebody who makes $100,000 a year, or whatever the number, whatever their number is, it's always related to an income. I went to my son's econ class this last year. He's a junior in one of the schools up here, a private school up here in the Milwaukee area. And I was allowed to come in and speak to the class, which was a lot of fun to talk to sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And I asked that question. When I asked that question, I had everybody write down their answer. Because I did not want to have, you know, one person, you know, shouting something out, and then everybody else saying something that relates to what that first person said. And in this class, and there was 20-something students in the class, almost every one of them, when I asked them, it was a definition of rich, had to related to an income, except for one kid. He related it to having, you know, wealth or money put aside, and basically he said all the time in the world to do whatever you want to do. And I said, that's interesting, because that's basically what my definition is. It's to having the time to do whatever you want to do. You know, you have to have money to have the time. And so somebody that has a very simple lifestyle and does not have to work is rich. Somebody that has a very somebody that has a more flamboyant lifestyle, they need to have a lot more money put away to be rich. When you hear about the stories today, even in the economy, where the rich are cutting back, and you know, the foreclosures even are the boats and the yachts and the things like that being taken back, the repos on those.
The repos, yeah.
Right? Well, how is that? There's these rich people. They're not rich. They just have a high income job. That's all they have. So
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So to tie a number on rich, it's almost impossible to do. But in order, if we did that, I would say in today's world, somebody would have to be, and it depends their age also, right? So I'm going to say if you took a mid-40s individual that lived a moderate lifestyle, they'd have to be in the $10 to $15 million range. And that's a moderate lifestyle. Yeah. And most people are not liquid rich either.
Yeah. 3797, you have another questions, I believe.
Do you have any like have you ever heard of residual income?
Yeah. That's my favorite kind of income.
And then how would you suggest somebody to go about that to get residual income?
Okay, well, there's different ways to earn residual income. And for the people that don't know what residual income is, what it is ongoing income. So basically what you're going to do is you're going to put your efforts in one time, and then you're going to get paid over and over and over and over again. So residual income, if you're a TV star, comes in the reruns of a TV show. If you're a musician, when the song and the music gets sold over and over again, you develop a residual income. So if you have a talent on that, and that is definitely one way to do that. People that are authors that have very high, you know, the best-selling books out there, they develop a residual income off of that. There's also, you can develop a residual income from real estate. If you find a rental property that pays you, let's just say your cost on the property are $1,000 a month, and you have revenue coming in every month over and above that of $1,400, you would develop a $400 a month residual income. And then there's also businesses out that derive residual income for people. And that was actually my first exposure to residual income as a business that I started. And that really, really opened my eyes to what life really can be. If you don't have a residual income, you need to go out and figure out how yourself you can develop one. And there's not, again, you know, it said, what stock do I pick, or what mutual fund do I put? There's not one answer for everybody. There's certain interests that you might have that might fit for yourself. But if you develop if there's something like that you can invent, if you will, that everybody is going to buy, you can develop a residual income off of that. If you can trademark something and get that out there, you can develop a residual income. So, but there's really, truly ways to do it. The other thing, though, is be careful. There's a lot of things out there, a lot of companies that promise that, but they don't deliver it. So you need to be very, very careful when you're looking for that residual income. I would study it. I would talk to people that have residual incomes, that really have residual incomes, and find out how they did it.
Okay.
But it's the only kind of income to actually have. And quite honestly, and I even put it in my book, is, you know, find about 10 hours a week where you can develop and put efforts towards developing a residual income, because, you know, we still have bills to pay. So,
yep.
You know, you can't give up your job. Most people can't just walk away from their job. They don't have anything in savings to live on. They do have time. So, you know, turn off the TV. I always say, you know, turn off American Idol, and why don't you go create your own dreams instead of watching these people create their dreams? And if you really
right.
have to watch American Idol, DVR it and watch it at 11 o'clock at night before you go to sleep.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, there's an example of that a couple weeks ago, I believe, that, you know, actually I talked to a guy, and that's one of the excuses is that, well, it's American Idol. I'm like, I just start laughing. All right, go watch American Idol.
Yeah, exactly. Watching other people create their dreams and, you know,
right.
Some of your dreams through them, right?
Exactly. Does that answer your question, 397?
Yeah, can I ask another question?
Go ahead.
But, like, a lot of people are not, like, you know, actors and actresses and pop stars, and they're not fortunate enough to be able to afford, like, you know, houses. Well, nowadays they're cheaper, but still they might not be able to invest in a house. So would you suggest, like, maybe looking into a home-based business for residual income? And if so, what would be some, like, good sources to make sure it's not a scam?
A home-based business is probably the best way for a regular person to go about developing a residual income. The DSA, which is the Direct Selling Association, is the legal source that Modifier watches over the home-based business. I'm gonna tell you, I'm not a big fan of most multi-level marketing companies. I'm not here to say anything good or bad about any one individual. There are some out there that are good companies, but just be sure you know and understand the pay plan before you go into a multi-level marketing company. Make sure the company has been around for a long time. Make sure there's a training system involved with the company. Make sure you have support. You need to have access to talk to many people. Talk to a ton of people to find out before you make a decision, because there's a lot of dreams that are promised, and there's always new ones popping up all the time. You know, the newest and greatest thing, and when you see that, those are things to run away from. If you're going to get paid for signing into a company, or if you sign somebody up and you're going to get paid for that, run away fast.
Okay.
You want to have products that are sellable to people, and you want to have not just one or two products. You want to have everything.
Exactly.
Okay. Now these are
my opinions.
Do
you agree or disagree that it would be worth it to invest 10 hours a week for like 9 years to make a six-figure income that's residual? Would that be beneficial to people?
You're darn right. Well, you know, if you look at it this way, you can. There's a couple options out there for people, right, to make some extra money. One is go out and get a part-time job with that 10 hours a week. And the other is to take that 10 hours a week and go develop a residual income. If you worked 9 hours, or if you did work for 9 years at a part-time job, you would not get, when you're on your last day, you would not get paid. But if you work for 9 years developing a residual income.
I found that in the hard way, yeah.
Right? Once you work that 9 years, you're all done. You can go out and enjoy life and then you're good.
Do you have a family?
Do I have a family? Yes, I have a wife and three kids.
Wow, are they little or?
I have a 17-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 7-year-old.
Wow. They probably like having you home, huh?
Because
home, right, if you have residual income?
Yeah, I have residual income. When I first started my business, I told them what I was going to do, and it wasn't easy. I still work my business. Actually, I'm working it harder now than I ever have. It's between the residual income that I've developed was one of the things that allowed me, and because I've been very good with money and finances and understanding how the things work that I have. A nice nest egg put away that I can work off of, and so it allows me to be able to work both. And now the time is focused on building my business, absolutely. But what it also allowed me was last year I spent basically writing the book and playing with the kids and the family.
One more question for right now. Are you Christian? Do you go to church, or like do you believe in Jesus Christ, your personal Savior,
to church every Sunday with the
religious
exception of,
views?
I go to church every Sunday. I'm going to say, with the exception of tomorrow, I will not be going to church because I have to take my daughter to a children's Christian theater. She's doing a play at a church, so it won't be a difficult church thing for me. But my wife's taking the kids to church.
Okay. All right. And I'll listen in for right now, and then maybe I'll have questions later. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, 3797. Now, Sean Walls, I know that talked about that you were in a corporate world and you were making six-figure income. Now, my question is why is it hard for them to looking into other businesses or to open up their options of looking in some business or anything like that?
Well, if you take why would a high income person look at a home based business? That's a great question. A lot of them, the reason you have a hard time to get people like that to look at a home based business is they typically have bigger egos. They think that they're doing fine. They think they're well. Nothing's going to get in their way of what they're doing. If you have a business owner already, he's got to concentrate on his business. Business owners are wonderful people to have look at a business. But a lot of times, depending on who they are, they're so in tune to what they're doing, and they have families that they have to feed. They got responsibilities there. And it's everything they can do just to keep that going. You will once in a while find a rare bird in there if you talk to people, and that is open enough to taking a look and covering their butt, if you will, because everybody needs to. And I think that's one of the things that people are finding out about this recession, is it's not just the blue collar worker that is hitting. It's hitting absolutely everybody.
Exactly. I know. Yeah.
The problem for people that make six figures, that, and if you're out there listening, you make six figures and say, well, why would I? In order for you to make that six figures again this year, you have to do what you did last year. Next year, in order to make six figures, you got to do the same thing again. And what happens when you get called in the office and the boss says, I got a problem, I mismanaged the company, I got to let somebody go, and it's not me?
And then that's the end of the road for them. Now, I know that I was just looking into, or I read an article about the about people, a lot of people looking into what's so-called Plan B, depending on the, the corporate things out there. And is this because of the recession, or is it because of people is like just wait, having their eyes open and a lot of things?
I think it has to do with the recession. I think people, it opened their eyes. And when, your hours are being cut back and the friends and family is cut back, when you see the company struggle, when you see sales aren't coming in like they used to come in, when you listen to the news all day long and nothing's positive, when you see your 401k has dropped, one of the things that I found interesting and one of the reasons I wrote my book is because too many people out there thought they were going to be okay, and they're not. Somebody needs to tell them the truth. Somebody needs to tell everybody the truth out there. And I happened to be at a friend of mine's house about a month and a half ago. And sitting on his kitchen table was a magazine, and it's a local magazine for a large city up here in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And it's a business magazine. And the cover of the magazine, the title was What Happened to Your Retirement Parachute? And they had their four experts with a big article in here. And they took, here's a hypothetical individual. His name is Ralph. He's age 57. And he planned to retire at age 65. He lost 42% of his 401k last year, leaving him $59,000. He's a manager in a staffing firm. His salary is $52,000 plus 5% to 10% bonus potential. His wife works part-time as a librarian, earning $22,000. Has a 19-year-old in college. Has a 14-year-old. And he has a CD worth $10,000 in savings. And his home is valued at $207,000 and is fully mortgaged, okay? Now, if that doesn't sound like the typical American, nothing does, right? That's a typical American.
That's your average Joe right there.
That's the average Joe. Now, he planned to retire when he was 65, and he had lost 42% of his 401k, leaving him with $59,000, and now he's scared and doesn't think he's going to be able to do it. He wasn't going to do it in the first place, and that's the point. When I read that, I'm like, oh, my God, this is why I wrote my book, because people think they're going to retire. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who I'm going to say he disagrees with my theories just from the conversations we've had. And after reading my book, we got a short, quick conversation, and we talked about retirement. And I just said, you're not going to retire. Well, what do you mean by that? I said, you're going to work. I hate to tell you, sometimes I feel like I got to punch people.
Yeah, twist their arm.
You can cherry coat it, you can hide behind it, you can pretend what I'm saying is not true. You will be working when you retire, which is why you're not going to be retired. You're going to pretend you're going to be retired. You're going to say you're retired,
right,
but you're going to be working somewhere. You will be working, period.
Exactly, and that's that happened because I used to work at the restaurant, and I was working with the this is like 4 or 5 years ago, and I was working with a 75-year-old lady that who were like ornery all the time, every day. She's like complain about this, complain about that, and she was the Bush hater ever,
mm-hmm.
The biggest Bush hater ever, in my life I've ever seen, because she would like literally say something like, someone's out of shot that president, So he's blaming somebody, he's blaming the government for her failure, and
it's her failure, not the government's.
Exactly, and since in fact she's working now, I think you mentioned that on your the other show that there's a website actually called Retirement Job or
retirementjobs.com. Who decided to put those two words together?
I don't know.
What happened, though, is, the way we are in this society is we're like, we're sheep, or we're just follow along, and all of a sudden we just start saying retirement jobs, and then all of a sudden retirement jobs becomes part of the, it goes in the dictionary, and it becomes that, that's how it is, it's my retirement job.
Yeah, he's like, I'm just working because I got to find something to do.
Yeah, that's the biggest myth out there too. The people tell you that all the time. Oh, that drives me nuts, and I hear that all the time. I really do it because I like to get out of the house. Okay, well, tell you what. Let's be honest. If you didn't have this job, would you be able to pay all your bills, do everything you wanted to do, eat everything you wanted to eat, survive, and live the same lifestyle that you had previous to retirement? No, but I really like getting out of the house. I need something to do.
Here's what I tell him, sir. Why don't you go out there and save whales or something?
Well, right. Go on a cruise, right? If you really need to get out of the house, volunteer. There's a lot of places looking for volunteers.
Exactly. That's the thing. Now, since we're talking about that, can you go on and explain that Social Security process and how that works? I mean, I'm 34 years old right now. I mean, am I supposed to, I'm expecting that when I retire?
You laugh.
Because I'm really looking forward for that, Sean. Don't tell me.
Yeah. That is the actually, I was having this discussion with my my son just a short time ago. I did not think this market would crash, if you will, the way it did. Who did, right? If very few people foresaw this coming.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it would happen now, but I did think it would happen between 2012 and 2013, and that all has to do with Social Security. It all has to do with retirement for the baby boomers, and how it has to do with Social Security to me is just, I said, the retirement with the baby boomers and the 401ks, and at 70 and a half, they got to start pulling their money out of the market, so then that's where you would have a big downturn in the market. But the point of on Social Security is back when it was first instituted, you had, and I don't remember the numbers, I have them somewhere, but it was 25-1 workers to retirees. And the retiree would live on average, I think it was about a year and a half, it could have been like 14 months or 16 or 18 months. And so there wasn't a lot of payout going on. Well, we're coming into the times where it's going to be three workers per retiree. Mathematically, it doesn't work. Everything that they're doing in Washington at your state capitals, it doesn't work. They are bankrupting this country. There is not enough money. They can't tax you enough. They say they're going to tax the rich. The rich do not have, and you could take all of their money, period, and it wouldn't cover what the government's doing.
Why is it 66% of people saying it's, you know, they're good for it? You know, they voted yes to tax the rich.
Well, because they're not being taxed.
Because they're poor.
Yeah, well, you know, it's okay if the other guy pays, right?
Yeah,
it's always
exactly.
Okay if it's the other guy pays. So
exactly, and this is why, you know, I mean, this is, and it's sad to say, this is why Obama wins, because that's what, you know, he knew. You know, he looked at the numbers, you know.
Well, it was already 40% of this country does not pay anything in federal income tax, 40%.
Wow.
All he has to do is get it to 51%, and it's game over.
Exactly.
And by the way, the Republicans have been no help in this whatsoever. They're a bunch of buttheads as far as I'm concerned also. I'm not, you know, people, you know, when you get into politics or sort of, I have my views. I don't like either party. I think they're both bankrupt. There's very few individuals in one of the parties that are good. There's very few. I could name some. I'm not going to.
Right.
But, you know, I wish they would start their own. I wish we would start a third party for people like me. You know, but you know, I said, and it kind of, you know, the Truth and Honesty Party, you know, that would be refreshing.
Right. Yep, but there we go. It'd be like right next to the Rainbow Coalition.
Yeah, but people, you know, people say all the time that they would like that. They want the truth, right?
No, right.
They don't. People do not want the truth.
No, they don't. They just, you know, they just lie to me. You know, basically that's what they tell you. Lie to me. You know, it's like this with the. Obama's logos, you know, change is about change. You know, people don't care what kind of change, it's just as long as change.
Yeah, change.
They change out
there. We all make the jokes about, you know, the change. That's all we're going to have left in our pocket. And sad to say, it's not a joke anymore.
Right. Now, I know what when it comes, those when it comes to, like, the country and you know, how the American politics runs, you know, people want change. But individually speaking, though, they don't want change. You know, why was it so hard for the people to step out of the box?
Why is it hard for them to do it? It's,
yeah.
You know, we're creatures of habit, and we develop routines. And it's so hard to get out of our routine. It's everything we can do to get through the day. What I write in the book, I actually explain what your day is really like. Okay, I explain what vacations are really like. I take you through the processes of things that you go, man, I can just totally relate to that. So it's when you see that and you go, you know what, I am really tired of that, and I need to derail the path I'm on and take a different path. Only then are you going to change. But until you hit that desperate moment, you're not going to change. You're going to continue to do what you've always done. You're going to continue to get what you've always got. It's just the way it is.
That's
just human nature,
right?
And by the way, we've bred it in. We've been bred since we were kids to think that way, right? We've been indoctrinated.
Exactly.
We've been totally indoctrinated. You know, the whole school system's about that. And now, you know, we're doing it to our kids. We send our kids into the same system.
Exactly. Now, 3797, I believe you have some questions.
I was going to say, except for my husband and I, we homeschool because, you know, we plan to, this is what we plan. We are actually unfranchised owners. We, somebody approached us with the business, and it was just really a blessing from God, because the guy that approached us with the business, he said that we weren't the type of people that he would have even let in the business. But he went ahead and let us in the business, and so we've been taking the product, we've been talking to people, and we found personally that people are more interested in the business and even products now, even though the recession has come, or like people say, the recession's here. You know, people are still asking us about the business and products, and I was, you know, we plan to raise our kids to things differently. You know, sorry about that. One of the babies. But yeah, so I was just going to comment that we're raising our kids to actually think differently, and we might incorporate them into the school system when they're old enough so that they can get business, you know, line up business partners so that when they graduate, they can be, you know, have money coming in. So just wanted to comment. One more question. Is the book only available through your website, or can somebody get it from Amazon.com or from the library, or how would
it's
you
only,
suggest
it's it? Only available through my website right now.
Okay. Now, could somebody buy a copy and give it to their library? Get passed around, or no?
Well, once they have a copy, there's nothing I can do to stop
just
where it
to make
goes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So the website you can go to the Illusions, I-L-L, you know, the word Illusions, and realities.com. That is Sean's website. Now, let's go back to the caller was talking about the recessions and people still finding, you know, people ways to spend. You know, I work in the, in my other things, of source of income, that works in the hotel industry, and, you know, I find that, yeah, they do find a way to get away. You know, even though with this recessions and all that. But here's the things that I found. Majority of those, you know, I mean, they always, I'm not saying it always, but I've seen some people that, you know, when the thing's not going right according to their plan, they get really, really upset to the point that, you know, they get, I don't know. I mean, they're just really upset. Now, I know that, you know, maybe because of, the, maybe they only get to go on vacation twice a year. Is that the case, Sean?
Well, you know, they've only get a couple of days off. And they,
yeah,
you know, when they get those days off, they want them to be perfect, you know. And there's nothing perfect. Stuff comes up all the time. And,
exactly.
Yeah, they're stressed out. And, you know, people, I don't know, we have to learn to be civil with each other. You get a lot further when, you know, when you're nice to somebody. I had an adult beverage spilled on my cell phone. And so my cell phone stopped working, and I took it back to my provider, and they looked it up. Well, it's out of warranty. And I said, and I told them what happened. I said, well, I spilled an adult beverage on there. And she kind of laughed, and she says, you know, since you were honest, I'll get you a new phone.
Wow.
And I didn't yell at her. And people yell, she goes, off the time. So, you know, because I didn't go in there and, you know, so I, not to say that, you know, everybody would, but there's people out there that would make some story up there and lie about something and, you know, and then blame the cell phone company for something and try to get, you know, a free phone, right?
It was
my
fault.
You know, my fault. I went up to it and, you know, it all worked out anyway.
Or, yeah, Ellen came down and just sweeped me off, and then, you know, when I get back and the cell phone's all wet.
Yeah.
Something like that, or a Sasquatch just picked it up and put it in his mouth. Yeah, they and that's what I found in like, you know, dealing with people, and I deal with a lot of people, and I'm not generalizing a lot of people, you know, all of them, but you know, majority of them is being nice, but there's, you know, quite a few of them that just, you know, they just yell at you for no reason. If there's not going, you know, if not things not going right according to our plan, they will yell at you because it's the one that, like you said, you know, they only get 2 days out of the year and they want to get this perfect as possible.
Oh, yeah, and they're, you know, they're spending the only nickels they
money.
Have.
Yeah, they're
right?
Spending the money and everything, like that's what they do. Now, the, I forgot, I lost my notes here. Now, the, let's go back to the illusion of retirement, because I want to touch up on that real quick, and I know that you're already dead. But with going back to baby boomers, and how many baby boomers actually are retiring? Well, when they are going to retire, starting when, what year?
2000.
Are they retiring now?
Well, yeah, they're starting to retire now, actually. I think it's 2009, 2010. And I don't have the numbers in front of me. One of the things I'm not very good at is remembering exact dates on things. I'm not good at that. But what they're going to find, a lot of these baby boomers, is when they get to that point of saying, I'm done, they're not done. And I think there are a lot of them already discovering it right now.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing story after story after story now, and it's just common that of people that did retire, and all of a sudden, within a short period of time, whether that being 6 months to 2 years, going right back to work, and because they didn't think, or they thought they would be fine, and they come to find out that they're not. See, what they found, you know, when I was talking about earlier about what percentage of your income you need to retire on, they told the story in the beginning, it was, you know, 80%, and then they said, well, that doesn't work. It's 80% of your pre-retirement income. What they've actually found is it's between 100 and 110% of your pre-retirement income is what you need.
And
people are going, well, how is that? That doesn't make sense to me. Well, I'm not going to give you the answer because I explain it in the book. So there's my
pick up
the book. I do explain it. And when you read that part of the book, you'll go, oh, that makes sense. Now I get it. Because because it's just true.
It's just true. I was reading an article about that, and they did a poll on, you know, baby boomers retiring and all that. And also, there was a staggering percentage of baby boomers, like, actually, they're in debt, went to their neck, you know. Can you touch up on that without, you know, telling, you know, your secret on the book in there and everything like that? And how, what steps that, you know, they need to take and have to be taken in order to, you know, get a hold of your debt before it ruins your life?
Well, you know, in a lot of cases, I think it's almost impossible for people. You know, we're back to the word creatures of habit, and we've been indoctrinated to think certain ways. In order for them to change, they drastically have to change. And you get yourself into such a situation that it's impossible. You know, one of the things I tell my wife, and I've told people, and I, you know, I've talked about for us personally, we either have to increase revenue or decrease expenditures. One of the two, right? So if you're not going to increase revenue, well, then you have to drastically decrease expenditures, which means that you might not go out to eat, you're not going to take the vacations that you used to take, all that stuff. You know, you can't. My son came home today. He's like, he had new shoes. They were $90. I'm like, oh my god! You know, I said, I wear $25 shoes. Yeah, no kidding. You know, So I'm looking at that, and I have a deal set up.
That's when you start talking to your son or daughter, and he goes, hey, you know, when I was growing up, you know.
It was something that I read in a magazine, and I thought it was a good idea. Because I'm trying to teach my kids the value of money, right? So instead of just going out and buying him shoes, right? And you go out and you're like, well, these are the ones I like. Well, they're $90. I get mad, right? So, because I can't spend that kind of money on me. I don't do it for me. Why should I do it for him? So the idea in the magazine was to allot a certain amount of money for them to spend over a period of time. So the way I did it was I allotted for, you got spring, summer, and you got fall, winter. So they have two seasons that they have to buy clothes for. And I set a dollar amount, and when that's gone, it's gone. So if you have $90 shoes, then you might not have any pants. So, and I'm going to tell you, actually, it's worked out quite well to the point where both of them had not spent all of the money. Which is nice, and I do let them carry it over to the next season. So, that's why I didn't get mad or anything, because I said you're allotted X amount, and it's not a lot. It really actually is not a lot of money when you look at how much, you know, when the kids are growing constantly.
I have five kids, and they grow about every day.
Yeah, but you know, when there's only a certain amount, and this is how much you get. Period. So how bad do you need those shoes? Right. Well, apparently he needed them really bad this time. So
now let's go back with your book. And actually, I know that can high schoolers or any college students benefit?
I think it's a must read for anybody from a sophomore junior on, and you know, not just because I wrote the book. Do I feel this? It's information that people need to know. The illusions and the realities. You're being taught, what you're being taught and what you're being told, the system out there is a complete illusion. You need to be woken up to what the realities are. If you do X, you will get Y. That's where you're going to get, okay? How do I know? Because I did X. I got Y. I've talked to absolutely, I couldn't tell you how many people. They did X, they got Y. I put it all together, and said, you know, in order to really get ahead, this is where you really need to be. This is what you really need to have. And by the way, what your financial planner or your financial advisor is telling you isn't even close. They're selling you on a program to get you to buy their product. They're going to tell you a number that you need to get to because it's something that you'll believe. You'll find it to be realistic. And then they can nice with charts and graphs laid out exactly how you're going to get there without any guarantees, of course. But you know, it's a program that you'll buy into. You'll sign on a dotted line. You'll give them your money. They just got paid, and they're happy. It doesn't make them bad people, by the way, because what are they trying to do? They're trying to feed their family. They were trained within the same system financially that everybody else was. So why are they wrong? Now, right now, you hear a lot about dollar cost averaging with when the market's gone down, right? Dollar cost averaging to me is just nothing but a sales form in order to keep getting you put more money in the market because these guys get paid based on how much money's in the market. You know, if you keep giving, if you pull your money back and they're paid a certain percentage of assets and the assets drop, their income goes down. But if you'll keep giving them money over and over and over again, you can keep the influx of money coming in, they're going to continue to get paid. That's dollar cost averaging.
That makes sense.
It does make sense, doesn't it? Never been put to you that way before.
No, I know that you talked about the website earlier, about the what do you call that? Retirement jobs.
Retirementjobs.com.
There's actually the website, actually, collegefinder.com, that actually one of my websites partner store now. Mm-hmm. Like a college finder. You know, you find your own college and stuff like that. And there's also a lot of stuff that comes out right now on as far as, like, finding stuff. You know, governmentgrant.com or something like that. Speaking of government, the federal, I don't know if you read an article about the, 1,500 or something like that, postal workers forcing to be retired.
I saw a headline on it, but I didn't read the
article. Yeah. No, yeah, there's people thinking about it. I thought, you know, postal, you know, I thought they're like federal. Isn't that the case?
The post office is a government-run bureaucracy, if you will, but it's run as an independent business. So it's kind of like independent government business.
No, I didn't read a whole articles on that thing. I believe it's just, you know, those who are eligible to retire actually will retire, you know, and forced to retire, you know.
Well, they're forced to stop being postal workers, but they will not be able to retire. I'm just telling you right now, they're not going to retire. They're going to have to find work somewhere else. Now, they will receive pension and, you know, benefits from, you know, from being a postal worker. But it will not be enough to sustain the lifestyle that they're going to want and to cover the bills that they have.
Exactly.
And then you say, how can you say that? You don't know. Okay, so there's one or two people you can point to that are able to pull it off. Okay, let's talk about those people, not everybody else.
Yeah, let's talk about this. There's a percentage of it. Now, I know that you know, talk about, like, the high schoolers and college students, and you know, high school is going to college. You know, it's is it wise to, like, you know, get a huge loan for their college? Is that a wise decision?
No, to me, if you want to be paying it off till you're 40-something, I know so many people like that, it's crazy. That, you know, their student loan follows you for the rest of your life. No, I'm not going to tell you not to do it. You know, I said that's a life choice. It's, you know, if you want to be a lawyer or you want to be a doctor, or you want to be because you love doing something, but God bless you, go do it, you know.
Exactly.
Understand the costs that come with it. And that's the only thing for people. All I want you to do is understand what you're doing and accept it and be happy with it. You know, there's too many of us that we're forced to do something, and then we go do it, and then we have to pay the consequences not the rest of our lives, but forever. There's statistics everywhere about, you know, if you go to college, you're going to earn X amount more than if you didn't go to college. You know, we can manipulate statistics any way we want. And the people that are selling you the college program, they are manipulating those statistics, and that's what I need to get into is figure out exactly how they're manipulated, but I know they're manipulated.
All right. Well, we have about 5 minutes on in our segment here, but I don't know if you have 379 7. Do you have any other question?
So I was going to ask you if you believe that there's a good such thing as a good depth and a bad depth, or but you had said something about that if you believe in something that you think that it's, you know, good to get in depth, but as long as you realize that there's consequences and to weigh whether or not it's worth it. Is that correct?
Yeah, a good debt and a bad debt. Well, a good debt is if you're buying an investment property that pays you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to borrow money to get the property, no problem on that, and you're deriving revenue that comes in greater than that. That's good debt. Bad debt is a car payment. That's credit card debt.
Right.
You know, those are bad debts. One of the biggest myths, and I write a chapter about it, is your house is not your biggest investment. I hate that when people say your house is your biggest investment. It's like fingers on a chalkboard to me. So I wrote a chapter about that. And that's a lot of people that have talked to me, they're like, that chapter on the house, that made sense. You know, because I do is I put things into perspective that, you know, and tell you things that nobody else has told you.
Okay. Sounds good there. Sounds good there, Sean. But, you mentioned about social media and all that, and, I should be able to help you out on that.
Oh, I appreciate
that. A lot of...
I got to figure that out. I need to really figure out how to work the whole Facebook thing and the other ones out there, and, how to tweet or Twitter do all that. I need to get the information out, and I don't want to just put it right now in the bookstores. I want to get it out on a word-of-mouth basis. And,
exactly. There's one girl I was asking. I was like, hey, do you know how to Twitter? And she's like, yeah, isn't that what you sit on a dot pad and you put you skin it and you put your leg in one color?
Yeah.
I was like, no, that's Twister. So that MA Chatterbox and all that, I have a couple of people asking, how do you put those, audios in there and everything like that. So, yeah, more than welcome to help you out in that, but I'll definitely get that book if you guys are listening here, IllusionsAndRealities.com by Sean Walsh. And you from, is it Whitewater?
No, I live in Muskego. I'm from Waukesha.
Muskego, Waukesha. Okay. Well, I don't know where I get Whitewater from.
They both start with W.
There you go. They both start with W. But, this is Great Inferno again. Thanks again for coming up, Sean Walsh. Definitely we'll have you on again.
Thank you very much.
And, hopefully soon. And, feel free to stop by here at blogtalkradio.com/Great Inferno. Once again, go to www.illusionsandrealities.com by Sean Walsh and get his book. Okay? Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Okay, before we go on then, you can go to www.shopinsuperhighway.com to get all his, shopping needs. So, catch you later.
What?